Yeah, I'm starting to learn, because if you agree in principle that we miss a 5 o'clock bus, we take a 6 o'clock bus. I'm informed that there's no other food coming. That tray there has got our tea that was meant for the afternoon. So, well, for 3 o'clock, which is already 3 o'clock now, so we're having both lunch and tea combined. Why, honourable members, I'm requesting that we do meet, we need to reflect on the processes of how we are going to do public hearings. We need to make plans, and I'm raising this because there are certain parliamentary processes that are already taking place. There are certain people who were in my office this morning briefing me that they are going to do what is making awareness programs in provinces. Now, we need to agree, and I was just corrected. Rather than me saying, Honorable Janji, you know Eastern Cape very well, consult and give us a breakdown, check what the parliamentary staff is saying about public hearings that they've done in the past, and let us agree that those things will come formally and be adopted. Even though I get influenced by people who come from that area that know very well. In terms of navigating, even in terms of transporting. So we need to actually agree, because I can tell you this much, House Chair has said to me, bring them in terms of clusters. We have already done two provinces that I need to actually brief you about again, and condone having had people there agreeing to guide me on that one, and therefore table the next group of provinces and table again. So if Honorable Judge says let's do it tomorrow, she will probably change her mind. Let's look into how this program is going out. Well, tomorrow is a real long packed day. It's longer than this one, the day tomorrow. Tomorrow we are meant to finish at 8:30. Today we are meant to finish at 5:30. So I'm pleading that if we do really make sure we finish around 5, 5:15, may I request that we push this item to today and then we deal with it. Okay, thanks. Think about it as we listen to the monitoring presidency team. We need to introduce ourselves to the team, because the first time we meet them. I'm Sibongiseni Dlomo, the chairperson of this portfolio committee. We are meeting a health honorable member. Honorable members, please indicate and introduce yourself.
Good afternoon. I'm Philip van Staden, member of this committee.
Chiri Zimnyai, member of this committee.
Lady Jira, alternate member of this committee.
Ziva Kwakube, a member of this portfolio committee.
Hasina Ismail, alternate member of this committee.
Kenny Jacobs, member of this committee.
Nkoli Sisokacha, member of the committee.
Thank you very much. You probably will then introduce your delegation and then take us through the presentation. Thank you very much.
Chairperson and honorable members, thank you very much for the opportunity and good afternoon. My name is Thulani Masilela. I'm from the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation, which is located in the Presidency. With me are my two colleagues, Ms. M. Dibakwane and Mr. Mutlapametsi Madizi. Chairperson, we bring apologies from our Minister and the Deputy Minister, who would have loved to be here, but they are unable to make it.
Then proceed. Thank you. We take the note.
So, thank you very much, Chairperson. We received a request from the Honorable Committee to come and brief the committee on the outcomes of the health sector for the financial year 2018-2019. So what we did in our presentation is that we start with an outline of the purpose, which is informed by the correspondence that we received from the committee. We would like to indicate that our presentation focuses on the performance of the sector against the National Development Plan, which is implemented in five-year plans called the MTSF, Medium-Term Strategic Framework. Our presentation will, as much as possible, strive to reflect both the national picture and provincial variations in the performance of the health system. We will also incorporate findings from visits we have made to health facilities across the province. With that view, we will be trying to present a view from the top as well as a view from below. This is the structure of the presentation. It starts with the NDP, MTSF, synopsis of key health outcomes. We look at progress and challenges, and as I indicated, the visits that we have done. Chair, there's also a matter that we refer to as a paradox of the South African health system, which we would like to speak to. Then there's the Presidential Health Compact, and then we shall conclude the presentation. We have about 60 slides, but we'll try to be efficient in going through them. Chair, this slide just reflects the NDP vision, which we won't spend time on. I believe honorable members are well familiar with, you won't waste your time on it. But just to say, the vision is about a health system that produces positive outcomes and is accessible, which means it's not out of reach. It's got 9 goals, which include life expectancy, TB, maternal and child health, deployment of primary health care teams, universal health coverage, and the filling of positive skills. So we do monitor implementation of these goals. When the NDP was broken down into 5-year plans, for the health sector, there were 10 strategic priorities or sub-outcomes, which are listed on the slide, starting from universal health coverage, the last one being the efficient health management information system. Then, Chair, in this presentation, we indicate both the achievements and the challenges. We're calling it areas of progress, as well as limitations or constraints. But we will also be fair to the health system and to the country and also highlight those areas where we think there's progress, there's good progress being made. Therefore, the next 8 or 9 slides are actually talking about the health profile of South Africa. And when we look back, what are the trends that we see leading up to the year 18-19, which is the focus period of the committee? The first point is that the empirical evidence that we examine from different sources suggests that health outcomes have improved or are improving. And this includes the indicators that are listed on this slide, including life expectancy for both males and females, maternal mortality ratios, as well as child health mortality rates. This slide just elaborates on the breakdown between the different genders, meaning male life expectancy, female life expectancy. There's a report that has been received from WHO, which arrived a week ago. We have been working with a figure of 134 per 100,000 for the maternal mortality ratio, which means for every 100,000 deliveries, 134 women die. But the WHO recent data shows that the number has actually gone down, which means it has improved to 119 per 100,000. One other area that we look at, Chair, is the number of births and deaths in the country, particularly in the last 4 to 5 years, which is referred to as crude mortality. What we discovered is that from the year 2002 right up to 2014, the number of 2015, the number of deaths was coming down. But if you look at the subsequent years, from about 2016 to 2019, the total number of deaths has gone up, and that is what this slide is showing. So what we are saying is that on the whole, the total number of deaths decreased from about 581,000 in 2002 to 541. Between 2014 and 16, the decrease was from 538,000 to 526,000. And this was a positive step because the number of deaths were decreasing despite the increase in population size, despite the increase in the number of deaths. However, from 2016 to 2019, this is the increase that I'm referring to of about 15,000. So we went and studied the mortality and causes of death report of Status A. What we are finding is that there's been an increase of about 4% per annum on the non-communicable diseases, the non-natural causes of death, mostly. The non-natural causes of death, the traumas and the violence have increased by 1%. And then the natural causes, which include your non-communicable diseases, are the ones that show a sharper increase of about 4% per annum. That is the interpretation we are attaching to this report. And fortunately, both reports come from Status A. Chair, on this slide, whereas the overall message is a positive one, which is that life expectancy is increasing, there is a concern that we wish to raise, and this is also the concern that we hope when the committee calls provinces and the national department to report to the province, the committee will also raise and maybe get more scientific explanations than the presidency can provide. Chairperson, there is a difference of 9 years between male life expectancy in Gauteng and the Free State for the same period. So a male person born in the Free State today is likely to live 9 years shorter than in Gauteng. In the Free State, when it comes to female life expectancy, a female person born in Gauteng is likely to live 8.3 years, which is 8 years, 3 months longer than somebody born in the Free State. And we are in the same country. Now, these are the provincial variations that we are referring to. And later we'll make the point that health is not just a product of health services. It's also a product of social determinants of health and other factors. But these provincial variations are worrying. It means the country is not developing at the same pace. So this slide just summarizes the three issues. The infant mortality rate in blue, which is consistently decreasing. The under 5 mortality rate in red, which is also consistently decreasing. The life expectancy at birth, which is going up, it's the green line, green dotted line. And we make the point on this slide that the trends that we are quoting here are corroborated by different sources, because we use what we call the triangulation method, where we use different sources. On this slide, we just reflect the WHO report, which comes from the Global Health Observatory, and which shows the maternal mortality ratio from 2000 to 2017, and this is where they show the 101.9, meaning it decreased from 201 in 2005 to 171 to 125 and to 119. And the WHO also graphs this decrease in the maternal mortality ratio over a period of time, and this is the graph that they have produced. That was an overall picture. We then go to the specifics. We look at the 10 priorities that were in the medium-term strategic priorities, and we do it per sub-outcome. The first sub-outcome was about universal health coverage, and the target for the period 2014-2019 was establishing a public-funded and publicly administered NHI through legislation to achieve those goals of universal health coverage, social solidarity, and cross subsidization. I won't spend much time here, and the committee is doing conducting hearings on this bill. But in terms of the process that was followed, we have just touched on a few steps, starting from the white paper in 2016, including the gazette of the implementation institutions and bodies for the bill, and the release of the bill that went to cabinet to request approval for public comment in June 2018. Our role as the DPME was to conduct a socio-economic impact assessment for the NHI bill, which is an independent assessment of what the bill could potentially could achieve and what potentially could be the limitations. The DPME conducted this exercise, and one of the issues we found was that the issue of consultation needed strengthening. We gave the DPME, the DOH, the permission to proceed with the submission of the bill to cabinet, but we also raised the point of consultation. And subsequent to that, they convened meetings with several stakeholders, including Econex, who had raised concerns about the bill, and that was the basis of us then issuing the certificate for the bill to proceed. The last observation we make on this point, on this slide, is that yes, the NHI bill was gazetted first for public comment last year, and now it's entered the parliamentary process. The target was 17-18. This was done in June. That's why we say slightly outside the reporting period. So while the fund has not been established, the legal process is underway, and the DOH has created a unit to drive this process. The second priority was that of improving quality of care. Under areas of progress, we have the establishment of the Office of Health Standards Compliance, the regulations of the office, and establishment of the functional ombudsperson. And we also note the matter that the committee is also fully aware of, that the health ombud investigated the life testimony matter in Gauteng, which also had a national profile. What evidence shows us, the evidence that is in front of us outside the health sector? Statistics South Africa conducts what they call general household surveys, and we have looked at the last 5 years. What we are finding is that overall levels of satisfaction in public health sector services among households have been above 80%. If you look at 2014, it's 81%. 2015, 81%. 2016, 81%. 2017, 81%. 2018, 80%. Now, the paradox that we spoke about at the beginning, we are saying these positive findings exist side by side with increasing levels of medico-legal claims in the sector and perceptions by people that the quality of health services is deteriorating. How do the two coexist? The next issue is that when you break down these levels of satisfaction amongst provinces, there's huge variation. This slide shows for each of the 9 provinces. If you look at the predominantly rural provinces, Eastern Cape, Limpopo, and Mpumalanga, they had the highest levels of satisfaction, with Limpopo having the highest levels of very satisfied users of health services. But if you look at the more urban provinces like Western Cape and Gauteng, their levels of satisfaction are not the same as those you have in the more rural provinces. There was also a target in the plan of ensuring that 10 central hospitals, tertiary hospitals, regional and specialized hospitals achieve 75% compliance with the national core standards. So the performance as at March 2019 shows that 8 out of 10 central hospitals achieved this score, 15 tertiary hospitals, and 14 regional hospitals. However, many of these targets were achieved. Members will note that these were largely process-related, in a sense of we shall establish this, we shall create this committee, we shall do this structure. What we have found in this matter, Chairperson, would also like to bring to the attention of the committee. The Office of Health Standards Compliance had conducted inspections in 696 health facilities by 2016. They also repeated this exercise, and there's a report that they presented in 2019 based on their work over the last year. What they found was that performance over the against the six priorities did not reach the desired level. However, there is a concern from the health sector, provincial and national, that the definitions that are used by OHSC do not measure what they purport to measure. So when they say there's 54% medicines availability, and the national department says there's 90% availability of medicine, what has been found was that the tools of OHSC will look at good pharmaceutical practices. Is there pharmacy in this hospital or in this clinic? Are there standard treatment guidelines? Are there protocols in place? And if they are not there, they score that facility low, even though medicines, actual medicines are available. So, SDPME, we are saying that the independent assessments by the office are very critical. But what is important is that the health sector and the office must find each other about what is it that is really being measured and how do we objectively measure that which we seek to measure. Otherwise, these disjunctures are going to continue. The next slide touches on the issue of the escalating medical legal claims. And the latest figures are actually higher than what we were presented. Which, for 2017-18, Treasury estimated that the payments for medical legal claims were at 101.33 billion, and that this represented a 1.4% increase. And between those years, 2013-14 and 2017-18, Treasury says there's been a 37% increase. And the large claims last year were 80 billion. Now 2019 is estimated at 90 cumulatively. Chair, we have, as the DPME, conducted monitoring visits in 60 facilities of different classifications. And why it's only 60 out of 3,800 facilities? Because we also have small teams, so we have capacity constraints as well, but we make sure that we don't monitor from the office, but we go out there in the field. Factors that influence our selection of facilities include the need to test the reports that we receive as well as the lived reality of the people of South Africa. We also examine issues of quality and equity, we track progress with ideal clinic, we do routine service delivery monitoring, and also follow up on complaints received from communities through their governance structures and sometimes adverse media reports. The next two slides just reflect the names and the districts and the provinces of the facilities we have visited, including hospitals and clinics. So with respect to the ideal clinics, what we found was that out of the 29 facilities that achieved ideal status, there were only two where when we arrived we disagreed with these findings. We found the opposite situation. But members of the committee have also visited some facilities and found that they do not agree with the status of ideal. While we generally have agreed with the classifications, what we found was that 70 facilities regressed between 2016 and 2017. So they achieved the status, and then over time when they measured again, we found that they regressed in some of the elements. And then users of health services also report some concerns to us, including long waiting times due to limited staff and so forth. But an issue we'd also like to be taken up with health services, that of governance structures. There's a study that was done by the Health Systems Trust which found that only 17%, 1/7, of primary health care facilities had clinic committees. Hospital boards in the facilities we visited, some of them felt undermined by the sector, felt that they didn't have sufficient authority. And then again, Chair, some of these challenges led to this summit that was called the Presidential Health Summit in October last year, which led to this compact adopted in July 2019 for strengthening the health system. Primary health care access has increased. And again, status says the proportion of people who use the public health services has increased, and the number of ideal clinics has increased to 2,035. HST found that 77.6% of patients reported positive experiences in the ideal clinics. Still under primary health care, the issue we wish to bring to the attention of the committee is that mental health is a priority for the country. What the sector is doing, screenings are going very well. But what is not evident is of the 94 million people who were screened, how many of them are referred for treatment and care, and whether there's a follow-up of those who are referred to see what were the treatment outcomes. What we are also finding, Chair, is the urban-rural inequities. Very profound, and they raise themselves even in this presentation many times. When you look at ideal clinics, the provinces that are predominantly rural, Eastern Cape, Limpopo, Mpumalanga, and Northwest, are the ones that are faring slowly or poorly, or the West, compared to the urban ones, with achievement of the ideal clinic status. The second concern we have is about this National Health Commission that was supposed to have been established to promote intersectoral collaboration, which hasn't happened, and yet the matters that require intersectoral action are increasing. Sub-outcome 4 is about reduced healthcare costs, and the NTP had those instruments, including regulation of prices, diagnostic and therapeutic protocols, amongst others. So the department requested the revision of this priority to focus on the regulation of medicine prices and the reform of the procurement systems. And what they've been doing on an annual basis is to publish the single exit price adjustment for comment by the pharmaceutical industry, and then adjusting the prices and minister gazetting it. We've also very briefly touched on the outcomes of the health market inquiry, and the department will elaborate on the findings when they come to the committee. But that's why they found over-servicing or over-capacity, investment in technology, higher treatment volumes than what was required, and the absence of any health outcomes data in the private sector. At the monitoring department, we were happy when the HMI also recommended the OMRO outcomes monitoring and reporting organization. With respect to human resources, these were the targets that the department had set itself, particularly focusing on the Cuban medical training program. And in 2018, a total of 712 students returned, of which 704 have been allocated to institutions to complete their training and then do internship and community service. There's a new nursing qualification that's been developed by DHEAD and DOH, and the aim is that by January 2020, the new colleges should be providing this new bedside training. But Chair, another concern we wish to raise is about inequity. There's inequity between the public sector and the private sector, as well as between the urban and the rural provinces. When you look at this slide, the blue color shows the number of health workers which are located in the public sector. So if you take nurses, for instance, even though the nursing council enrollment might show 287,458 for professional nurses, you would find that for total number of nurses, professional nurses being 140,598. Why we found that in the public sector, there's 67,000 of them. If you take pharmacists on the pharmacy roll, there'll be 14,000. And In the public sector, there'll be 5,000, which is less than half of the total. The rest are outside. Same applies to GPs. Same applies to specialists. That's when you compare the blue ink. But also when you look at each province, you will find that there are huge constraints between the predominantly rural provinces and the predominantly urban provinces in terms of their ability to attract human resources for health. With respect to health management and leadership, one of the areas we are looking at, and our table shows the results only up to 2017-2018. We are aware that the Auditor General has just briefed the committee about the audit outcomes for 18-19. But what this slide does is that it traces the progress over quite a number of years. You will see that there's fluctuation, a lot of fluctuation in the audit outcomes of the health sector. Two departments that have maintained their unqualified status is the Western Cape and the National Department over the years. The others have been largely qualified, others will be unqualified, like the Northwest. So let me go to the slide about the Northwest. Northwest was unqualified in 2015-16, 16-17, 17-18, but it regressed. Limpopo was unqualified in 2014-15, but it has subsequently regressed. We have witnessed a collapse of governance in the Northwest province, particularly in the Department of Health. That is why Section 100B was imposed on the province. How do we prevent a recurrence of such in future? This slide shows the progress with the establishment of a training platform, the number of managers who have been trained through this platform, and also the hub that has been, the knowledge hub that has been established so that health workers and health managers who want information can access it from this hub. We move to health infrastructure, and we note that in the baseline audit had found that many facilities were in a poor state. But what the sector reports is that between this four-year period, we're looking at 2014 to 2018, a total of 32 hospitals have been completed across provinces, either your replacement or new hospitals, some of which we were able to visit, others not yet. A total of 94 clinics and CHCs were also completed. For the facilities that we have visited, we've seen the transformation when new infrastructure is delivered, like this Makwele clinic from the old to the new clinic. Oh, by the way, this was a Honorable Janji's project. Yes, Honorable Janji, it was during her time that these facilities were transformed like this. This is Lotana Clinic. It was also during her time that this facility was transformed from this to that. And we are able to confirm there's 8 of them brand new. The one is the Lusikisiki Clinic, where the president went a few weeks ago, again during the created during the time of Honorable Chanchi.
Which district is this?
So, O.R. Tambo. This is O.R. Tambo, the NHI pilot site. Yes. So these are the facilities that were delivered. This is Kabalake in KZN, where the chairperson was MEC when these transformations were happening. We visited a number of clinics in the South Coast, Port Shepstone up to Margate. And we saw that what was being reported in actual fact was happening. Kabalake CHC, and amongst many others who could, time allowing, could have shown more. Sub-outcome 8 is about HIV and AIDS. We note the progress that shows overall HIV infections have decreased, but we're still concerned that amongst girls, the infection rates are still too high. On this slide, we acknowledge that the number of patients initiated on ART has grown originally to about 3.9 million, and then it's now at about 4.74 million. This slide shows the number as at March 2019, which was 4.6 million patients on treatment, but it has subsequently grown to 4.744 million in the public sector. TB success is also a good story. We have seen increased TB cure rates across provinces. And what was encouraging was that this success rate was across 7 provinces scoring 81% and above. We are worried about Northern Cape and Mpumalanga scoring below the average of 81%, but the rest were above. The death rate also seemed to be stabilizing. But, Chair, we say focus must be retained on tuberculosis because according to Status A, it remains the leading cause of death in South Africa. Death rate is natural, not natural death. While the number of deaths from TB are decreasing, the numbers are still very high. TB is still the number one killer in South Africa. And the tracking and the tracing of MDR-TB patients is still a problem. Only 61% of MDR-TB patients were initiated on treatment. The target was 80, so this target was not achieved. Maternal mortality, we have spoken about it. It has come down, even according to international evidence. But the concern we raise is that the target was that maternal mortality will be less than 100 per 100,000. So even if you take the best figure, which is 119 from WHO, it's still above this target. Number two, the SDGs are saying South Africa must achieve a maternal mortality ratio of less than 70. So the SDG target, as well as the NTP target, we are still away from them. The last point we raised on this slide is about malnutrition, particularly stunting. In 1994, the level of stunting in South Africa was 2017. Now, the Democratic government introduced a number of programs, and stunting decreased to 21% by 1999. But in 2016, it had gone back to the 1994 levels. So there's something that's not going right there. On this slide, we show the issue of non-communicable diseases. And we quote the report from Status A, which says these conditions are increasing, especially diabetes. And the HSRC also confirms what Status A is saying. Chair, we are about 8 slides to the end. And as we move towards the end, one of the issues we wish to raise as a concern is the rate of teenage pregnancies. Both the district health information system used by the health sector, as well as the demographic and health survey, are showing an increasing trend. And again, Chairperson, the issue of rural versus urban. Our rural provinces are still carrying a huge burden of disease, including socio-economic problems. If you look at KZN, you look at Mpumalanga, you look at the Northern Cape, the rate of teenage pregnancy is much higher than the national average of 12.7%. If you look at Gauteng, they are at 6.5%, which is half the national average. You look at the Western Cape, they are below.
They don't mean that teenage pregnancy is a disease. Eh?
No. It's not a disease. No, I said condition. I said socio-economic condition. That's not a disease, Chair. I agree with the Chair. This is about information systems, and we know the HG was taking the committee through the HPRS. So the data from national shows that 4.9 million people are already registered on the HPRS as a first step towards NHI, which is the development of the registry, and it covers 3.043 health facilities. And there are limitations in terms of connectivity, in terms of electricity, which have impacted on the progress of this area. But under challenges, we still say that one, the HPRS is just a patient registration system. It's an administrative system. It's not a medical record. The HPRS is not a medical record. The second issue is that we still lack an information system that incorporates data from both the public and the private sector. There's enabling legislation. The National Health Act empowers the Department of Health to enforce this on the private sector, but that has not yet happened. I will not go through the next two slides. They just summarize the key challenges that I've been talking about. But one of the challenges is about inequitable access to health services, and this is from Status A, saying that in 2018 only 16.4% of South Africans were covered by medical aid schemes, where predominantly in the urban provinces. And the lowest levels of coverage were in the rural provinces. It's a dominant theme that is coming across in our assessment. Chair, slide 56, I think, it's an important one. It summarizes the performance of the sector from against the baseline 2014 and shows performance by March 2019. Then we come to the paradox, and these are the last two slides. So the paradox is that when you read international literature, including from WHO, it says the improvement in health status of any population requires a strong and well-functioning health system, as well as interventions to address the social determinants of health. In South Africa, evidence shows that the health status of the population has increased significantly. However, the health system is beset with major challenges. There's limitations in human resources, in infrastructure, weak governance and leadership, lack of delegations, medical legal claims, which are reducing the health budget. But you have a weak health system coexisting with improved health outcomes. That is the South African situation, and there are many hypotheses about how that happens. One of them is we have done well on the vertical programs, but maybe not so well on the health systems-wide programs, but it's an hypothesis. Against this background, there was this summit that I referred to, where different stakeholders came together to develop an approach, a compact for improving the health system. And these are the nine things that they agreed on, which is in the Health Summit Report and Compact. The nine pillars start from augmenting human resources as pillar one, to pillar nine, which is the information systems. Chair, as we conclude, we emphasize that health is a human capability for all of us. It's not only an outcome of health services, but of social determinants of health, which require multi-sectoral effort. We have found that poverty, unemployment, and inequality also impact negatively. But the last bullet point, I must say, we also found as we were visiting facilities that management capacity and management capability are often an important factor which makes the difference between a well-performing health facility and a poor-performing health facility, even in the same environment. You will go to a health facility unannounced. So you arrive today. You find that health facility so well-prepared. You ask for registers, they bring all of them. You find staff members wearing uniform with name tags. You find the patients, even if it's full, that facility, there's a system of managing patients. And the patients are informed when they arrive that your waiting time is likely to be 2 hours or so. It is just because of these factors. You find another facility who you gave 1 week's notice. We're coming in 10 days' time. You arrive on the day, they don't know where the registers are. So, you know, one of these facilities we went to with 8 ministers and 11 deputy ministers. The CEO of the hospital didn't even know the performance indicators of the same hospital. Who is the CEO? And he was explaining, he said he was acting. That's why he didn't know the bed occupancy rate, the number of staff, the expenditure per patient, the equivalent. So that's why we will come to this and why we haven't gone into further details about it. We don't want to present anecdotes to the Portfolio Committee on Health. We would like to do a systematic study, a systematic review of these management capabilities and capacity which affect the performance of an institution. Then when we have that body of evidence, we can come back. But anecdotally, or maybe based on those 60%, 60 facilities we visited, indeed, that's the difference that we are finding. Leadership plays a critical role. Chair, I would like to pause there and thank the committee once again for the opportunity.
Thank you very much to the presenters of this planning, monitoring, and evaluation department from the presidency. You've done very well on 60 slides with your time. You know them well. You speak through your slides rather than to read one by one. Honorable members, this is a presentation of a department that is doing and assisting us to get there. We haven't been to these provinces and to these clinics and hospitals, but they've given us a bird's eye view of what to expect and what to find there. What I find different from the previous presentation of AG is not in the AG's interest to show you a best performing clinic, because that's not what they are meant to do. They're going to show you where there are problems and say, deal with these problems. But here, in the comfort of this presentation, it also shows that while there are challenges, there are certain things that work. And there are also certain things that worked last year and they are now deteriorating. And that's a very important observation. Honourable members, your chance to interact with the presentation. I always start here. Let me start at the back this time and come back from there. Honorable Kwakhube, in that back row, you are the only one. Then I come to the front. Honorable Janti, ladies first. Honorable Nyai, end up with Honorable Van Staden. Thanks.
Thank you, and thank you very much for the presentation. I've got two questions. One, it relates to the social impact assessment that you had done based on the NHI white paper and I think perhaps the proposed legislation. So I think there were two reports that you produced on the social impact assessment, the first one and now the second one. So I want to understand, because there are some various differences. In fact, there are a lot of differences from the report that you tabled the first time and the latest report. And so I want to understand from your perspective, what were some of the things that, you know, maybe clarity was given where there wasn't before, and why was there such a big difference on some of the, on your findings in this latest social impact assessment? So that's the one thing. And then secondly, this is more of a generic question and I suppose a little bit of an obsession of mine, because we have the Office of the Health Standards, which does its own monitoring in a sense, and we've got the Auditor General, which also does its own monitoring. And I would like to understand, this seems like great work from the department, but I want to understand, what are some of the things that you are looking at, and how is your monitoring done? Because when I asked the AG when they were here before, their assessment is very much myopic in the sense that it looks at just financial audit outcomes. And so I get the sense that you guys are trying to do a far more substantive look into, you know, health outcomes and how those are translated into patient experience. But I would like to understand a little bit around your methodology on how are you doing this and how are you doing this monitoring, because I do get a sense that as a country there's a lot of reports that sometimes overlap, but none of them actually give us a proper picture on how services are rendered and whether or not that is making an impact on people in general. So perhaps if you can just provide some clarity on that for me.
Thank you, Chair. Let's appreciate the presentation from MNE. Probably I will just comment then ask questions. But there's one question I want to ask on whether the MNE does have some interactions with some of the departments that may impact negatively on health outcomes. I am particularly looking at some of the ideal clinics that regressed I visited one of the clinics that was an idea, and I found it in shambles. And the biggest complaint from them was that they had no water for the past three or four weeks when I visited. So I'm asking whether there is this interaction. One of the things that is worrisome is the increase in malnutrition, something that we thought would manage to sort of do away with. But at the same time, I want to know if the monitoring and evaluation has considered that this malnutrition could be also linked to the teenage pregnancy that we see, because kids looking after other kids who may not be able to do it well, but still the other departments that are supposed to work hand in glove with health so as to try and, I'm thinking of department social development, for example, if they were to work closely with health, they could be in a position to help us. The last is whether you have your findings on the clinics that had regressed. What did they put forward as the problem that made them to regress? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think policy monitoring and evaluations presentation will help us to have a seamless alignment. How do we also do follow through on the oversight work that we're supposed to do as a portfolio committee? Now, look, after God, I believe in technology. So all I wanted to indicate... No, please. You know, I believe in technology. And I'm seeing people are going through across the province, they're taking pictures, they're coming and show us how... But if, maybe it could go as an advice to the high powers, please, while the ICASA or DOC, they are going to auction the spectrum, go and argue for reservation of a new commercial spectrum for the purpose of deployment of new technology, which can support the e-health or e-governance across all departments. I know they are allocated defense slowly, but those spectrum are not responsive to new technologies. Whether it's marine, you know, if we're to modernize the army, I'm just giving an example, because they're the key component of health as well. You will not be able to, because you could have a command center, data center, linked up with call centers and hold these things networked. You can be able to see problems real-time across the country. Real-time. There's no need to go and pick up in a plane, visit. You can monitor all your hospital in a dash screen and be able to intervene right from on the spot. So the president is speaking about the fourth industrial revolution, but you don't have a platform. What is going to happen if we don't secure new spectrum for e-governance or e-health? We are going to deployment of health services will be too expensive. You are going to go to Vodacom, connect me to support this ABCD. It's not about the broadband. I speak about spectrum, teleco, voice and data. You know, I'm saying if we don't do these things, deployment of, I'm just looking at Rwanda, they deploy even drones to deliver medicines in rural areas. You know why? They have a spectrum. Spectrum and spectrum and spectrum and spectrum. So the issue of the data, we have much more intelligence-led data, real-time acquired from all our facilities. If there's a problem, we'll be able to know. It should not be an issue of this research and institution and so on. just imagine if one would have to rely on the race relation research, you know, it could be misleading. I'm just giving an example. So because these people that are saving here, they have a particular various interest. They want to influence society and so on in a different way. So please, go to the high powers, even though you are responsible for monetary. Let's secure a spectrum for e-governance, which will also be able to deal with e-health. For new technologies, but the current existing spectrum allocated for public service, it doesn't talk to new technologies. You will not be able to deploy. Even issues of the medical record, data centers, will require that you have a spectrum. Then will be connectivity you're talking about will be the history. And the new kind of workers, you know, you are also speaking about the issue of the safety. I mean, the issue of the safety came strongly across the whole public sector, that doctors are being raped at the hospitals. Patients are not protected. Industrial action that don't want the employees to go and work. But if you have this, you can even have face recognition technology linked to the Department of Home Affairs. If I'm coming through here, you already know that I'm the risk because I've rape case and I may be able to want to rape again within that hospital. So I'm just trying to say spectrum and spectrum for e-governance or e-health. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Just for clarity seeking, the mortality rates slide you shared was on slide 9. Apart from HIV and AIDS and TB and natural causes, and just for curious sake, this high number of deaths in South Africa, apart from those, is it because we have a high violence rate in this country? If you can just help me with that. And then slide 20, I just want to know if you can perhaps tell us under what was the number of people under which this survey was done, because it doesn't actually reflect what we see in the report today from the Auditor General. 20. The outcome levels of satisfaction. Yes. And the problems we experience on grassroots level as well. And also the contribution factor that legal claims is now standing at 1.33 billion for 2017-18. So it shows this problem. So I just want to know what was the total number of people under which the survey was done. And then if we go to slide 35, can you perhaps clarify for us what the reason is for this, that there's more in people working in private than in public? Is it not that people feel more secured to work in the private sector than in the public sector due to the various problems and challenges we are facing in the public sector? And then on the last one, to slide 51, on the pregnancy rate, is there some programs in place, excuse me, Chair, and measures put in place together with the Department of Education to address this problem? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Slide number 60. Mm-hmm. Babutulani. Yeah. That program is all that emanated from the, firstly, the summit and coming into this. A very important slide, and everything that some of the colleagues have asked, Honorable Munai is asking about the IT, I think this is pillar number 8. In all this, what is the plan? What do you expect the department to do to move this forward? Number 2, what is your expectation from us in dealing with these issues, or maybe checking? How often do you want to, because this has actually been now prioritized, that is why it's not called a minister's health compact. It is something that I suppose your jobs are expected to be dealing with. The president had to actually dirty his hands to make sure that things in health are moving.
Now, when he sits there, he knows the problems in health, and they are all listed here. And there is expectation that somebody must drive these things and slowly and bit by bit realize progress on this. Help us to find us to play our meaningful role here too. But help me to understand, what are you expecting from the department? How often should they be driving these programs then?
Chairperson and honorable members, thank you once more for the opportunities. I will try not to repeat the presentation, but to give focused answers. And maybe my colleagues will also come in. Honorable Kwahube, your observation is accurate. The difference between the differences, if the images between the first and the second. In the first report, we were actually quite harsh. We picked up certain things which we felt that perhaps were rushed, and we sent the department back. One of the things that we identified was that in the compilation of the report that was submitted to us together with the policy and later together with the bill to go to cabinet then for public comment. There was focus, preponderance of focus on maybe the views of stakeholders who agreed. Because in CS, we say when developing this policy or this legislation, what total number of comments did you get from the public or stakeholders, can show them to us, or can you give us a summary of this number? How many agreed with you? How many disagreed with you? And that question is answered. Then we look at the conclusions that are drawn, and then where we find that there is a bias towards those who agree. So there's a bias towards the views of those who agree with you to the neglect of the opposing views. We raise a concern. Because whereas the DPME is a government department, it also sits outside government. It sits in the presidency. And the presidency should be seen to be impartial to a certain extent. And it should be seen to be listening to all South Africans, not only to government views. That's why I'm saying we send the department back. There was a report from Econex. Econex was hired by the private sector to do an extensive critique of the white paper policy, the bill and so forth. And Econex produced that report, which we read as well. So we went back to the department and said there are 5 or 8 critical issues that Econex raises. You might disagree with them, but then you must say how you intend to deal with these issues. Not ignore. You don't ignore a stakeholder who opposes you. You come up with an explanation, or you come up with an alternative way of, you know. So those are some of the processes. I will not explain all the steps from step one to the last step. But our main concern was how have the views of the different stakeholders been incorporated. By the way, including the views of provinces, where we picked up that the majority of provinces supported the policy and the bill, but there was one province that didn't support, and one that gave conditional support. And then we wanted to know how the views of the provinces that don't support and those who gave conditional support are addressed. That's why we sent them back. And then the revised thing, you know, was sent to us. I'm just illustrating one of the critical issues that we look at, and that is why having gone back and done the work again, we were able to give them the approval to proceed. So one of the concerns we had was around consultation. On the issue of the Office of Health Standards Compliance and the others, I would like to agree with you. The HSA uses what they call a sample basis. So there are 4,000 health facilities in South Africa, and the exact number is 38880. If the Auditor General walks out of the Parliament building and tests in two facilities, and they find that in those two facilities, what is reported in the annual report of the department is not consistent, it's a finding. If they visit 10 facilities, what they find there, it's a finding. Because they work on a test basis. And that is the first difference. The Honorable Member used the word biopic. I can't repeat the word, but there's accuracy in what is being said. Because you then use a very, very small sample to generalize to an entire population of health facilities or a population of human beings. The public health approach is different. So, and I'm happy there are two medical doctors in the room. So, in public health, when they say if you immunize 85% of children in a school, the other 15% are safe. Because the 85% has given the school children what we call herd immunity. They will not infect the other 15%. If your target was 90% and you achieved 85 or 88%, it's a finding. Though in terms of WHO regulation, the other 15% are safe as well. So that's the difference in approach. Is this some? And I think every year for the last 15 years, there will always be debates between health and age. One of the problems is this sample basis to test a finding. But that is not to say we must overclaim and overreport, and, you know. But so that's where the thing comes. Our methodology, we start with the NTP, and we're looking at high-level outcomes. But in the high-level outcomes, we also have to ensure that those health high-level outcomes like life expectancy, family mortality, child mortality, maternal mortality, the numbers that are reported to us can be verified on the ground. We visit facilities, we ask for registers. We look at whether there is a likelihood that these numbers that are reported are based on reality. We look at WHO data. We look at UNICEF data. We look at UNAIDS data. We look at other sources. How do they look at South Africa? Is what has been reported at national level consistent with what's reported internationally? So ours is a broader, high-level picture, but which also is informed by what happens on the ground. That's why we say it's top-down, but it's made by bottom-up. And we follow health indicators and how those health indicators are arrived at. So we'll not say there was no password for this computer, there was nothing for this. We look at the indicators and whether the data that's reported is consistent. It aggregates up to a higher level. That is our approach. Chair, I agree with Honorable Janji about the points that she's raising. We really do try to interact with other departments that are responsible for those functions that we call social determinants of health. We have a National Food Security and Nutrition Committee, which consists of 12 departments, starting from agriculture to health to social development to status A, treasure. And we're trying to infuse this intersectoral approach. And Honorable Judge is also absolutely right that even in the Sikisiki, when we arrived there, there was a problem of water, which lies outside the health sector. We do try to play that advocacy role to say, and I think this also will link to the point that Honorable Munyai was raising, to say there are certain things that are a public good. And those things that are a public good need to be prioritized. So water is important for all of life, but water is even more important for people who are sick or in hospital or in living elsewhere. And maybe for kids who might contaminate their hands, at school and so forth. I'm linking it to the appeal for spectrum to be treated as a public good, and that, you know, while it's auctioned, those government services must be, you know, protected. So I agree with Honorable Janji, and I'm using this example of the committee that we have, and these two colleagues are also members of that committee. We try to introduce this intersectoral approach. and we're trying to break the silos of APPs, because APPs have also created silos where people have targets to achieve. Which malnutrition, yes, truly, the factors that we see influencing malnutrition are consistent with those that are influencing high rates of teenage pregnancy. It's poverty, it's lack of access to information, it's inadequate access to services and so forth. We're trying to bring the departments together. And as the chair was saying, that maybe as departments come here, you can also be assisted. The Department of Basic Education does not allow the distribution of condoms in schools as part of their health policy. Right? And they make a legitimate point that the factors, the activities that lead to teenage pregnancy don't happen at school. They happen elsewhere, and the kids are here to learn. But at the same time, it's the reality that's facing South Africa. But then how do you then bring the two departments together to come out to some form of common understanding? There was a good example we saw in the CPC, and I'll keep repeating this because we saw some good practices when we were there. The Department of Health was saying, much as they don't allow us to go to the school, we find a house next to the school and we park our mobile clinic there. And then as the kids leave, we say, there's a clinic here, we promote reproductive health, we want to prevent STIs, we want to prevent teenage pregnancy, and you can come and access these services. That's one innovative way that the people have found. And yes, indeed, the clinic that regressed, we found one of the main factors was human resources and human resource limitations, where staff move in and out. And you know, what we also found was that the issues of policies, they would be expected to have updated policies, and they didn't have. But an important factor was that the Department of Health National kept raising the bar. So the ITA clinic manual, you have version 18. So you have facilities that comply with version 16. So as you move from version 16 to version 17 to version 18, the bar is raised. The bar is raised. And those facilities that were really exceptional will keep up. But there are those that when you raise the bar, you cut them out. Okay. And what you have done is to appeal to the department for stabilization of the manual, of the testing kit, so that, you know, it doesn't, yeah. So, which then leads me to the points that Honorable Munyai made. As I said, I do agree, technology is of absolute importance. The president has actually issued that instruction that Honorable Munyai is talking about. He says he wants to have in his office a screen where he can see the whole of South Africa and service delivery performance across the country. And where he can look at it, also in a speech when he was launching the district coordination model. He wants to see what is happening in each part of the country at a given point in time. And there's work in progress. The general problem we're having is when you capacitate the center, but the periphery is not capacitated, you are not solving the problem entirely. If we have this system located in Pretoria, which aims to give us real-time data, and which is able to help us to track projects immediately, but the area where the system is supposed to collect data does not have electricity, it won't happen. If the area where the system is supposed to collect data does not have spectrum, then we have a challenge. The center will be capacitated and powerful, but the bottom will not be able to reciprocate. So the challenge is both ways, that we enable the center to do that, but also the periphery to be able to provide the data. But that data is used at the point where it's collected. It's not used just to be sent to Pretoria. But, and I've already said I fully agree on the issue of spectrum. Spectrum for e-government, for e-health, for e-education, even for managing the public service, has to be protected and not just sold to the private sector at the highest, or to the highest bidder. Rwanda is leading, we agree. They were the first on the continent to come up with an EL strategy. When we health did theirs, they were also learning from the Rwandan experience. So we fully agree. We also agree that face recognition technology could assist us to lower the levels of crime and improve security, we really do agree. Honorable Fanstaden, yes, we have found that amongst the causes of death, slide 11, where the levels have gone up, the non-natural causes of death have increased on an average of 1.5% over this period. It includes not just violence or murder, but also motor vehicle accidents. We have one of the highest rates of MVAs in this country. And it's a phenomenon that happens, as health says, in the Department of Transport, but the outcome is attributed to health. But it's one of those things, so I will agree with you. It's not just trauma from violence, it's trauma from MVAs. And of course, the murders, as substance already indicated, that the levels of murder has gone up. Status A, in the general household survey, they strive to consult about 30,000 households at a given point in time. They don't interview individuals, or the results are not presented at the level of individuals, it's households. So that's why it's called the general household survey. And their sample size is normally of that order of magnitude. In the public and the private sector, there are push and pull factors. Those factors that pull people to the sector and those that push them away. And I think the factors that Honorable Fanstaden has raised are the push factors, which push them away, which is true. But it is also an injustice that the private sector that doesn't own one medical school in South Africa has more doctors than the public sector. That trains doctors in the public sector with public funds from both the Department of Health and the Department of Education. So they are benefiting where they didn't invest. And that is the injustice that is prevailing in the country. So, yes, on slide 51, we agree that the two, even three departments, Department of Education, Department of Health, Social Development, must all work together. And what we found is that each of them has a policy on reproductive health. There's an education policy, there's a social development policy, there's a health policy. But the synergies are not found. I've given the example earlier on of where the departments have different policies. The last set comes from the chair. Chair, yes. Can you give me a contact? In the full presidential health compact, there is also a plan. Chapter 6 is about monitoring. So it's monitoring implementation of the goals, activities, actions that were agreed upon by the 600 stakeholders who were at the summit. So, Chair, you're absolutely correct. There is an implementation plan, and the Department of Health, together with some of its stakeholders, are responsible for many of the actions. We agreed that for the rest of the year, maybe early next year, we'll be meeting on a monthly basis to receive progress reports, to identify blockages, to identify challenges. The meetings are convened by the presidency. They put stakeholders together, stakeholders account for what they signed up for. The expectations of us from the committee is that the Department of Health is also requested to present progress reports against the compact, not just to the presidency, but also to this committee. You know, because as the chairperson says, it's not a ministerial health compact, it's a presidential health compact. And I like the distinction that the chairperson has made. It's in that order of magnitude. So therefore, while we are tracking and monitoring on that side, it will be good that also at this highest level, they are also helped to track progress. And we brought one copy which we'll give to the chair, but I think we can have more. I don't know. Yes, thanks. So there is a plan here for the implementation of the program. If I've left out any question, I will back to you.
And if my colleagues, will just, if my colleagues want to end it.
It's nice to end a day like this, when we started the day with a lot of issues and challenges. I'm still in my mind dealing with the fiscal and the financial and fiscal commission presentation in my mind, how to take it forward. Yeah. But no, thank you very much. I think the take back message, colleagues, is that we can't run away from the fact, whether we like it or not, we can't run away from the fact that issues of health are a priority for our country. And issues of health have gone to the highest level into the country in terms of the presidency. And not, we happen not to be very far from making our contributions towards that. And therefore, we would need here to be really monitoring ourselves in terms of, are we doing what is expected of us to support these processes? Because this country is known to produce the best of the best in terms of policies. But follow-up and implementation have always been challenges. And therefore, I think the colleagues from this monitoring, evaluation, and planning are not necessarily able in the implementation of this policy, but to oversight and support and guide. We have also closely related role to play. We thank you very much. And I don't know when we are going to meet you again, but I hope that when we meet you, we'll also be smiling. And also, maybe not smiling, but because you have left us with certain expectations in terms of discharging our role. So we will also have to live up to that expectation in terms of discharging our role. Thank you very much. We excuse you now. Honourable members, please remain behind.